Goda's a landscape of sand and rock in the western state of Gujarat. Fertile land fast becoming desert. For every third year, the monsoon fails. Crops die and these farmers are forced to do piecework in exchange for food. Beside the road, 100, 150, maybe more villagers are leveling a hill to make a soccer field. Hero's a farmer. He's small and wiry, head smothered in a red turban, wielding a pickaxe, his feet bare.
And how long have you been doing this work,
Hero?
On this particular site, we have been working for 15 days.
What did you do before then?
Before that, I've been working on my own land in the house, near the house.
There's
no water, so we can't do any work on our lands.
100 miles south of Goda, the Namada River meanders lazily through a limestone gorge. Far below me, a solitary fisherman is paddling across the river with the morning's catch. Otherwise, the Namada seems untouched by human hand. Just 800 miles of clear, clean water running from the center of India to the Arabian Sea.
And Narmada River is the virgin river of India. It is one of the 5 biggest rivers of India.
Sunit Mehta is the former chairman of the Sada Sarova Namada Nigam, a private company set up by the Gujarat government to build a giant dam on the Namada to provide irrigation water and electricity to Gujarat.
It has remained virgin. Virgin in a sense that even today, even not a 5% of the river water are being utilized for any purpose. It is all going to sea.
10 miles upstream, where the river narrows through a rocky gorge, Sunit Mehta's dream is becoming reality. The bed of the river is almost lost from view beneath the concrete base of a giant dam in the early stages of construction. When it's finally completed in 1994, Sada Sarova will be the largest dam in the world, 450 feet high, a mile wide, and with over 2,000 miles of irrigation canals. Maharashtra, Madhya Pradesh and Gujarat, the 3 states through which the Namada flows, had been arguing for over 40 years about who should get its water. So it came almost as a shock when they actually began work on the dam in 1984. Gujarat has sold the dam as the solution to the nightmare of repeated drought. But it will also spur growth in the important industrial corridor that runs northward from Bombay into Gujarat. Environmental activists didn't pay much attention at first. But when they realized the dam was for real, they began to warn that damming the Namada would be an environmental and financial disaster.
There's not one dam in this country that is producing what was anticipated. The overruns, cost overruns were phenomenal.
Bitu Sagal is the editor of Sanctuary Magazine, an environmental monthly published in Bombay. 1,500 dams have been started throughout India since 1947, but less than one-third have ever been completed, the victims of corruption, cost overruns, and sheer inefficiency.
If 1,500 large dams have failed, I mean, what good sense is there to build yet another 1,501st large dam with the collective investments of all the large dams put together won't cost as much as this project does?
The promotional literature put out by the dam's supporters promises a green revolution for Gujarat, where irrigation, massive use of fertilizers, and high-yielding seed varieties will bring farmers overnight prosperity. It's the main reason that farmers like Bogilal in the village of Kochiapura have signed on to the project.
At the moment, what we think is, once the land start getting irrigated, we naturally get more yield and the profit will also be more. That's what we think at the moment.
But nobody's told Bogilal about the costs of the green revolution in other parts of India, of soaring fertilizer prices, the deterioration of the soil, or how farmers are now deep in debt to the banks. Bitu Sagal says a green revolution will be the ecological death of Gujarat, just as it has been in the so-called success story of Punjab.
Between 30 and 50% of the entire irrigated soils there are dead. thanks to soil salinity. The groundwater is awfully polluted thanks to pesticide and fertilizer use. Now, the soils of Gujarat just won't be able to take this kind of abuse.
Bidu Sagal also says damming the Narmada is absurd because it will mean submerging some of Asia's richest farmland upstream of the Sada Sarova Dam in the neighboring state of Madhya Pradesh.
Now you're taking all the water away, which is the heart of this zone, and you're taking it to a semi-arid zone where the soils are weak, they're absolutely powdery. It's just altogether too absurd. Sometimes I feel foolish even trying to attack this project, you know. It's quite stupid.
No one denies the desperate need for water. But Sagal says rainwater can be caught and stored behind small check dams and in village ponds just as effectively as behind a giant dam. It would not only cost less, but submerge a lot less farmland. But Sunit Mehta, the driving force behind Sada Sarova, says that simply isn't true. Besides, there aren't enough suitable sites for small dams. The alternatives offered by the environmentalists may be ideologically pure, he says, but they won't do the job in Gujarat.
The basic fallacy in this argument is that the small dams, the watershed program, conserving every drop of water, is not an alternative to big dam. They are complementary. They are not contradictory.
Musabai farms 10 acres of non-irrigated land. Like most farmers in Gujarat, he dreams of bringing the vital waters of the Narmada to his fields. So Musabai is in no mood to listen to those who say the dam should be stopped.
I totally depending on nature, and I have suffered a lot in scarcity. So if water will come, it will change my life.
But Bidu Sagal says Musabai and farmers like him probably won't see irrigation water anyway. According to the environmentalists, less than a third of the worst drought-affected districts will actually get the precious water. Because to save on pumping costs, the irrigation canals have been designed to flow with gravity, in other words, downhill, into the valleys, where the land tends to be owned by rich farmers. So damming the Narmada may end up benefiting those who need it the least, leaving Musabai and millions of poor farmers who've invested all their hopes in Sada Sarova prisoners of the capricious monsoon. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hullick reporting. Lakshman Bai is the sarpanch or leader of the village of Badgaon, about a mile behind the Sada Sarova Dam. The soil here is very poor and rocky. There's been drought 6 of the last 10 years, and the land is simply unable to support an ever-increasing number of mouths to feed. 3 years from now, Badgaon will disappear under the waters of the artificial lake created behind the dam. As Lakshman Bai says, few will be sad to leave.
There is not a single person in this village who is opposed to a dam or who is opposed to moving out.
The villagers are prepared to leave because they're now expecting to get something worthwhile in return. But that wasn't true back in the mid-1980s when work began on the dam. Lakshman Bai says the Gujarat authorities initially offered the villagers $7 an acre compensation and told them to buy whatever they could out of that.
We resisted that move and we told that we are not going to move out from this area until we get all our rights.
Faced with demonstrations and bad publicity, the Gujarat government came up with a much more generous offer of compensation to the oustees, the official term for all those whose land will be submerged. Under the new scheme, every adult oustee in Gujarat will receive 5 acres of irrigable land. Sunit Mehta is the former chairman of the Sada Sarova Narmada Nigam, a private company formed by the Gujarat government to build the dam.
We are giving not only to the land to those who are losing land, we are giving equal area of land to a landless who at present has no land whatsoever. I want to set an example to have a national rehabilitation policy in India, so that this becomes the policy for all the projects for all the time.
The land to be offered to the Austes is in areas that are supposed to receive irrigation from the completed dam. But this is where doubts start to set in, because although the dam will be completed in 1994 and its reservoir full, only a third of the main canal will actually be completed by the year 2000. In other words, the Austes will receive land that in reality will not be irrigated for a generation or more. And the offer of resettlement is only for those whose land is submerged by the reservoir behind the dam. Nothing has been offered the estimated 60,000 unofficial Austes, the fishermen and farmers who will lose their land and livelihoods to hundreds of miles of irrigation canals and service roads. Overlooking the Sada Sarova Dam itself is a splendid complex of government guest houses and apartments for project personnel, all air-conditioned. This is Kevadia, project headquarters. A couple of miles inland, on a landscape of dry scrub, giant boulders and huge tree stumps, a collection of tin shacks surrounded by rusting barbed wire. This is where the villagers of Kevadia have lived for the past 30 years, since the official foundation stone for the dam was laid way back in 1961. The villagers of Kevadia are the most prominent group of the unofficial Austes. Inside each hut, two or three families share a space 15 by 20 feet. There's no electricity, no running water. Outside, it's 120 degrees. The huts are human ovens.
Nothing has been given to them. They were just thrown off with some small compensation for the standing crop on the field.
Shripad Damatikri is a young activist leading the fight against the damming of the Namada.
And they were never given anything for their land. They were just promised that we'll give you land instead of land. They're still fighting today.
But at least Gujarat has established some sort of plan. Madhya Pradesh and Maharashtra, where most of the 100,000 official Austes will see their land submerged, haven't come up with any plan. Gujarat has offered to give these people land if they can't find it in their own states. But many of those affected are Adivasis, the original inhabitants of India. They lived thousands of years in the Namada Valley. They farm some of the richest land in all of Asia, and they don't want to move. It's the wedding season in the Adivasi village of Sondul on the banks of the Namada in Madhya Pradesh. But beneath the joyfulness, there's a deep sense of anger and despair. Ratanbhai owns 10 acres in Sondul. It's thick, black, healthy soil, ideal for cotton and wheat. Ratanbhai makes a good living.
No, it's not possible to find such good land anywhere in this whole region. Our land is very fertile and it's not possible to get such good land in this region.
Now, what will happen if you can't find land? Will the government give you money in lieu of compensation of land?
We don't want anything. We want our land that is here. We don't want any compensation. We don't want any alternate land. We don't want anything. We just want our land here and we're going to stay here.
The vast majority of the 100,000 Adivasis have come together to oppose the dam under the leadership of a burgeoning group of environmental activists, whose headquarters are here in the little town of Badwani on the banks of the Namda in Madhya Pradesh. They work out of an attic on a side street with one phone, an old jeep, and sheer stamina. The driving force behind the movement is Meta Patkar, a slight, intense woman in her late 30s, who gave up a career in Bombay to come and work with the Adivasis. She spent the last 5 years literally walking the length and breadth of the Namada to drum up opposition to the dam.
Come on, I've got to catch up with you.
This is what... Right there. Can you see the huts?
Yeah. The hill on the other side.
That's Badal.
That you've got to cross the river then?
We have to cross the river and then...
That's where the big meeting is?
Yes.
How do you get across the river here?
There are boatsmen and the fishermen.
But the boatman isn't here, so Meta starts an impromptu meeting with a handful of Adivasi who are fishing in the shallows. They need no convincing. As the opposition to Sada Sarova has become more vocal and attracted media attention, the state governments have become increasingly hostile to all those who oppose what has become for them a symbol of a better tomorrow. The Madhya Pradesh government has interrogated both Indian and foreign journalists trying to meet with the opponents of Narmada. Gujarat declared the Sada Sarova dam site a national security area, off limits to all visitors. Demonstrations by the Adivasis have been broken up by force and activists jailed. Shripad Damitikri says environmentalism's a dirty word now.
We are not only considered merely nuisances, but enemies of the state, CIA agents receiving money from abroad, puppets in the hands of international conspiracy to retard the development of the country. These are some of the allegations. And in fact, to be called an environmentalist has almost become a derogatory term in this country, at least.
Engineers have calculated that if the height of the Sada Sarova dam was lowered just 30 feet, the artificial lake behind the dam would shrink so that 90% of the Adivasis and 80% of their farmland would be spared. But Gujarat says that would make the dam uneconomical and has refused all compromise. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hollick reporting. For its supporters, the Narmada Dam is a symbol of a modern technological India ready to leap into the 21st century. But for many of the dam's opponents, this is a cruel illusion.
We want washing machines and we want everything else for 800 million people, and that's why these dams are being built.
Bitu Sagal is editor of Sanctuary Magazine, an environmental monthly published in Bombay. Sagal and most environmental activists say the damming of the Narmada isn't just about the environmental costs of submerging precious forest cover or some of the best farmland in Asia. It's come to symbolize a basic choice between two philosophies of development, a Western consumer society versus a low-technology, self-sufficient model that borrows heavily from the ideas of Mahatma Gandhi.
We are not fighting to stop a dam. What we are fighting to stop is that craving for the production of power as a means unto, as a purpose unto itself. We're asking, in fact, through the Narmada project to redefine development.
Specifically, the dam's opponents argue that the project's estimated $8 billion price tag could be far better spent on small-scale projects that would directly benefit the rural poor. For Shripad Damodikri, an activist in the Narmada Valley, the Sada Sarova Dam is also about social justice. Why, he asks, should poor Indians always be the victims of a philosophy of development that means urban middle-class India can enjoy consumer luxuries most Indians can never hope to afford?
To what use should be the resources of the country put? So that somebody in the urban area or some person belonging to elite class can have more of paper or can run his air conditioner. So this is the kind of questions that the movement is raising.
Shripad and the other environmentalists claim the local state governments of Gujarat, Maharashtra and Madhya Pradesh, who all have a financial and political stake in the project, have refused their demands for a complete halt to construction so that the whole question of the social and economic consequences of the dam can be thrashed out in public. So the dam's opponents have switched their focus to the World Bank, which has pledged about 10% of the total project costs. The activists believe that if they can force the World Bank to pull out, other countries and banks will also start to rethink their loans, and the project can be halted.
The World Bank brings an aura of credibility with its entry into any project of a borrower country.
Meda Patka is the leader of the Narmada Bacho Andolan, or Save the Narmada Action Committee.
We feel that if they had studied the whole situation beforehand, before they went into the agreements and contracts and awards and policies and provisions, then they would not have been able to go ahead with this project.
In the 1980s, the World Bank was often criticized for insensitivity to the environmental consequences of many of the development projects it helped fund. Reforms were put in place in the mid-1980s, which make environmental impact statements central to the bank's loan making. In the case of the Narmada Dam, the World Bank has accepted environmental assessments for the valley's soils, forests, and wildlife, drawn up by the three state governments. But the dam's opponents, both in India and in Washington, say these assessments were poorly designed and give a wholly inaccurate picture. They claim few officials actually ever visited the Narmada Valley. And Sripad Damodikri says the data and maps used were often well over 50 years old and totally unreliable.
And a lot of the so-called village survey is a paper survey using documents which are existing in the files of the local village officials, which are hopelessly outdated, hopelessly manipulated. So these are the kind of things which are there.
Environmental groups in the US say the World Bank should never have accepted these assessments, that it's ignored the true environmental and social consequences of the dam. Laurie Udall, a staff attorney at the Environmental Defense Fund, has visited the Narmada Valley on several occasions. Udall accuses the World Bank of hypocrisy.
They have violated their own loan conditions, loan and credit conditions, as well as their own policy on forced resettlement. It was a policy established in 1980.
Detailed policies for the resettlement of 100,000 oustees whose land will be submerged by the dam's reservoir were supposed to be filed back in 1987. Yet only Gujarat has filed a resettlement policy, and that almost 2 years late. Medha Patkar, leader of the Save the Narmada Action Committee, says Gujarat's record in actually carrying out resettlement is poor.
Look at what has happened with Gujarat villages. You know, one village is resettled at 8 different places, 9 different. It's a clear violation of the agreement with the World Bank. But no one is paid attention to. And the World Bank only says that there is considerable progress. What does that mean? Then why do you put the conditions and why do you claim that you can monitor the execution of your own agreements?
Sada Sarova's opponents simply don't believe promises made about resettlement will ever be kept. Mike Baxter is the World Bank's agricultural officer in India responsible for Sada Sarova. Baxter says the bank has incorporated many of the activists' concerns into their environmental guidelines.
One point difference between us and the activists is that the activists tend to say, if this has never been done in the past, why will it be done now? Our starting point is this has never been done in the past, adequately perhaps, but also probably has never been prepared so carefully as in the past, or has been as closely monitored, or is there so much to lose if it's not done by government?
Baxter thinks it's too simplistic to reduce Sada Sarova to a big is bad versus small is beautiful debate. He believes both approaches are needed to overcome the region's perennial problems of drought.
We think that within the same area, within the same catchment area, there is room also for small tanks, for soil and moisture conservation and so forth. So the point is, even if we came, I think, in 50 years' time, or if we'd come 50 years before, we probably would have also supported the Sada Sarova Dam.
And Sunit Mehta, the driving force behind Sada Sarova, says the waters of the Narmada are so vital to Gujarat's future that it will carry on with the project regardless, even if the World Bank does pull out.
If you are under impression that by stopping the aid of World Bank, this project will stop, you are under illusion.
Is there any way that you are going to allow this project either to be halted or slowed down or compromised in any way?
No question.
For you, the talking is past, this has got to go ahead.
Got to go ahead.
History is there to remind Indians that only 500 of 1,500 dams have ever been completed because of cost overruns, corruption, or sheer inefficiency. Gujaratis insist Sada Sarova will be a lifeline for their state. But if the dam's opponents turn out to be right, Sada Sarova may end up as the biggest white elephant of them all, a monument to a philosophy of development India can no longer afford. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hollick reporting.